Yeah, so this is Kevin Sharpley. I'm just a little bit out of sorts because I walked into this phone booth, and the next thing you know, I'm on Marku 42. I just don't understand it. How did this happen?
Welcome to Marku 42. I'm Eduardo M. Fryer, and with me today is
Vicky Jacobowski.
And you know what? I'm gonna tell you guys. I'm gonna give you guys a warning right now. You may want to pull out the wallet because because you know what? We're talking. We're talking Kickstarter. We're talking giving money to new projects, and we're here with returning champion.
It's Roy Johnson at Standard Comics.
Yep. And actually, are we, and here's the thing, Roy, are we here to talk about more Standard Comics stuff?
We're not. It's not technically a Standard Comics project per se. I'm actually doing a bit of a team up with some other indie comics creators, including Alan Silverwood, who is an editor and a writer at Marvel Comics, and
nice,
doing something under his imprint of Pop Skull Comics, and this is it's sort of related to superhero stuff, but it's really in the milieu or the theme of Halloween and spookiness.
So we got
a bunch of indie creators, characters that are sort of occult, supernatural, horror-type themed characters. So basically, we've got a bunch of bad guys and a bunch of good guys trying to stop them. And but it's within a horror kind of a Halloween type of situation. So,
okay.
Actually making his first appearance in the comic is a excuse me, a character of mine, Saint Samhain, who's basically trying to do the usual villainy things and consolidate some power.
They're always trying to take over the universe, aren't they?
Well, why stop at the universe, Vicky, when you have the multiverse and you can sort of get your fingers in.
Oh,
I have access just to the souls of one universe. When you can.
Okay, hey, you know what? Go big or go home.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there you go. You know why? Wow. Okay.
That's the basic gist of it. We can talk more about details, but
yeah. So now is he, is your character now, is he part of the Standard Comics universe?
He will be, I guess. He's one of those, the easiest part of comics creation is just coming up with characters. Oh, I'm going to draw this thing and I'll come up with an origin and some powers. So he was just kind of sitting there. I hadn't gotten to use him yet, but I sort of published a profile on Facebook or something, and Alan saw it and thought it would be a good sort of lead villain to tie everything together. And he had the idea of this, Halloween themed story. So we'd actually sort of discussed it a couple years ago, but he's had some health issues that sort of tied things up, and the wonderful world of COVID is
happening.
We got everybody together, and we're aiming for, I think, this week for a launch. As long as it launches within October, you're still sitting in there, because one way or another, you're going to have something in October, and might as well be the launch, because that's going to get the attention, right?
And then then the question is, how long is the Kickstarter going to be for?
Campaign will be for a month, so 30 days, starting probably this Tuesday.
Excellent.
Okay. So,
I think Kickstarter is running a sort of an internal, you know, Halloween themed thing. What are they calling it? Witch starter? So you they
Witch starter. Witch starter. Ha ha.
Related to
Witch starter.
Halloween.
Cute.
So this one's a bit of a departure in the sense that, you know, my stuff has traditionally been, what's your demographic? Old superhero nerds. And now this, and it's like, what's your demographic? Well, it's like the Venn diagram of overlap between horror fans, okay, horror comic fans, and superhero comic fans, because it's
a little it's of everything.
All those things together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, it's, you know, you're not doing anything. You're not doing anything anyone hasn't tried before. I mean, hey, Marvel in the 70s. We're talking,
oh,
you know.
Yeah,
we're talking Tomb of Dracula, Frankenstein. geez, the Living Mummy, Man Thing,
Werewolf by Night.
There you go. Which, yes. By the way, okay. So confession time. I haven't seen the Disney Plus special yet. I want to. Here's my thing, because it's like in my house, you know, in my house, we're all like, you know, fans of the MCU. It is just getting everybody together to watch it. I mean, I don't want to be like, oh, well, you know, you guys haven't.
I'm just going to go watch it without everybody else.
Right, exactly. I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that guy, you know.
Okay,
so.
I can't really give you any grief, because I did not watch it until yesterday, because it was the first time that I had enough time, you know, during daylight hours, that my husband and I were both home at the same time, because he works crazy hours, and so I didn't watch it till yesterday. But you gotta watch it, honey. It's great. You'll love it.
I already had one thing spoiled for me about it, and
well,
it's like,
we won't spoil it for anyone yet.
Yeah. Well, I'll say that it would have been cool for me to, you know, get it revealed to me watching it, just seeing the, you know, seeing what the spoiler is. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I have that to look forward to. It would have been cool to get the surprise, you know, just by watching, but still, that is really cool.
You mean you'd prefer to experience the art produced by a series of talented people more than you want to hear some idiot's half-assed summary of it? Someone's artless summation of the most superficial elements of the...
That's why we always tell people, before we do our reviews, go watch it, enjoy it.
Make sure you've seen
it. Then come back and listen to us talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, that is true. That is for real. You know, because you know, it's sometimes people want the experience of going to the theater and getting the surprise twist and going, whoa, I did not see that coming.
Yes.
Holy moly! I did not see that coming.
Think of when Return of the Jedi came out.
Yep.
And somehow my older brother somehow managed to feign not only being sick, but then my mother took him to go see it during the day. So I come home and I'm going to go see it with the rest of the family that night. And he goes, psst, Darth Vader dies.
Oh, that is.
My own brother did that to me.
Oh, that is.
My
just,
own brother. And, you know, even though that was many years ago, I still haven't forgiven him. So
I think what you might be thinking of, Roy, is
I can't believe Darth Vader is his father.
Right, yeah, exactly. There was like a
think about it.
Yeah, yeah. They're coming out of the theater of Empire and everybody's like, ah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. But
no, we've been there.
But here's the thing. So going back to the horror comics, now, did you ever read any of those old horror comics?
I did, sure. Like, but it was more of a peripheral awareness of, like, you know, Hellstrom and, you know, Man-Thing. I would stick those in as horror elements too, right? And it's
Well, Damien Hellstorm, his dad is Satan. So it's like, yeah, I think it counts. Yeah, we'll count it.
Yes. And probably more like DC's House of Mystery and
Oh,
what was the other one?
House of Secrets.
House of Secrets. Mm.
Yeah, there you
go. And when the Spectre was doing his part as the avenging right arm of God, where he's like punishing people for being wicked and whatnot. Yeah. It's all that kind of stuff. That kind of influence, right? So that's the vibe that we're going for, right?
Yeah. Well, and I got to admit, I did read, what was it I read? I don't own it, and I want to own a copy, but I did read Captain Britain and MI-13. I read the storyline that involved Dracula trying to invade England. I did read that one, and I got to say, I love the clever idea of Dracula's old foe, Quincy Harker, being like, hey, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to have a spell put on my skull so that as long as it's around, vampires can't enter England.
And it's like, something went wrong with that.
Yeah, well, it's freaky, but it worked.
Have you ever read those Kim Newman's Anno Dracula series?
No, I did not. I have not.
I would highly recommend that you check those out. Basically, the premise is, in effect, pretend that the Dracula novel is real.
Okay.
But at the end, spoilers on this 150-year-old novel, instead of them defeating Dracula, they screw it up. Dracula gets away. And then it's Dracula essentially spreads his influence successfully throughout England. He enthralls the Queen Victoria. And that the whole thing diverges from that, a point of divergence from a fictional story. And then he's throughout the novels, he's tying in any kind of public domain vampire related character or story and putting a different spin on it. So Count Orlok from Nosferatu shows up in one of.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's interesting.
Okay. That's kind of cool. We got Nosferatu showing up too.
We can't necessarily draw on other comic books for influences per se, at least not directly. You can't stick those characters in, but we can always have sort of stand in a Doctor Strange type character. We've got a Doctor Spectral who's one of the contributors characters, and it's an alternate reality version because spoilers, we kill him off on page one.
Well, you know what? Hey,
bites the bullet.
Well, you know what? One of the great things, one of the great things with comics is multiverse.
That's right.
Yep. This
was good altered universe, multiverse, because it gives you an expansion on without rewriting maybe a storyline you like. It gives you additional ways to explore and play the what if game, and that's kind of fun.
Well, also that's where it's like, hey, I wonder how this character would do if they were like this, you know. Then you could really play with that, not have to worry about somebody just being like, you're clashing with this, and it's like, okay, it's just multiverse.
Now, sometimes it is used poorly, but I love it when it is, because I kind of feel like it's coming into its own in a really good way, whether we're talking, MCU, of course, but even there's so many other places where it's really kind of coming into a really nice, oh, look, we can do this. We can do this well. Star Trek's doing it. I kind of feel that there's so many different, there's just so many different places that can kind of play around with this. And they're better writers. And I can't wait to see this Infinite Souls because, ooh, this could be kind of cool too. I'm just assuming based on the recommendation from my good friend Eduardo, and I do, and no offense, when he tells me something's going to be good, it's going to be good, that this is going to be great. And I'm just looking at this one piece of cover art. that's on the Kickstarter. And I gotta tell you, I want to know more.
Yeah, yeah.
These characters look fascinating. And I know nothing about them, but this visual, this one itty bitty piece of visual. Who are these people? Why do they interest me so much when I know nothing about them? And you know,
I guess that's the thing, is you don't know anything about them, right?
Like, yeah, and you want
that's
to know.
That's true. Yeah. Well, like I mean, these are some amazing artists you guys got here. Who? So is Alan the artist, or is
Alan is the writer and the guy who sort of put it all together as an idea. And he met an artist, the guy who did the cover, Reese Hannigan, at a, I think a comic convention in Ireland. Like, Reese is Irish, so he kind of recognized his talent there a few years ago, and he's only improved since then. So we kind of locked him down for the cover and the interiors. And it's a really, like, just looking at the black and white art, I think you could publish the black and white art as its own thing.
Which, by the way, for a horror comic, that's a big compliment.
Yeah, I think it creates a nice atmosphere, and you know, I've kind of suggested that, you know, we could offer a black and white version of the book as an additional, right? Oh. You get the regular one, and you can get the black and white one.
That would be best of both worlds, right?
Oh cool. Man, already my wallet is like my wallet is in another room right now, but it's like,
oh God.
it's in another room, but it's like, but right now it's like, don't listen, no, you only need one, you only need one, just go for the, you know, just go for the regular, you know.
Look, your kids don't need to eat every day. That's a myth.
Hey, my kid's all grown up. I don't have to worry about him anymore.
They don't have to eat every day. So the that's kind of one of the things, is right, like, you hope to be able to corral people based on, this looks like a good thing, but
you can't
really know until it's out exactly what it is. So
yeah, although it is, I do like that. I love, you know, I love Vicky's reaction just now, that she just saw the cover. She just saw the cover and she's like, "Who are these guys? I want to know more."
Yeah.
Because to me, exactly. I mean, I'm a little bit of a snob, in the sense that I hate it. I hate it when somebody uses, and this is usually at the top level, where somebody goes, "Well, we want to have a recognizable IP." It's like,
we have Wolverine on the cover.
Yeah, exactly. We gotta have Wolverine on the cover. We gotta have, you know, Cable guest star. We gotta have Venom show up for no reason at all. It's,
you
like,
know what? Sometimes something new is fun. You know what I mean? I love the stories that I've grown up with. I mean, a lot of these characters, some of these characters that I love predate me even. But I like something new. I like to be enticed with something I've never seen before. Because I like a bit of nostalgia doesn't mean I don't want new. And I think that sometimes people really get stuck in that rut. Oh, mm-hmm. We can only do this. We can only do Superman. We can only do Batman. Anything else, anything new, anything outside the box, anything beyond this, nope, we can't do it. Oh my God, no. And then we're missing out on a whole nother world because some power that be goes, no, thank God for Kickstarter. Because I feel like it's a great equalizer. It allows these independent artists and writers and producers to say, you know what? I have a voice. And then we, the people who actually are going to buy them and read them, can go, ooh, that looks cool. I'm going to back it. I'm going to read it. And maybe I can continue to you know, get something new and fresh. I mean, I'm sitting here looking, you're right, I'm just looking at this cover art And isn't that what cover art's for? Cover art on any comic book or LP or anything else. Sorry, I just dated myself there. You look at it and you go, ooh, must have. I mean, that's been true with movie posters and just about every form of medium since the dawn of mankind. You know, that cave painting, ooh, must go into that cave. You know, it's what we've done. It's how we've attracted each other. It's how we've gotten our point of views across.
And I think that there's some new and there's some old, right? Because...
Yeah.
Thank goodness at some point I saw the Halloween movie mentioned Samhain.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know what the hell it was. Okay, so you've got this old Gaelic Halloween, but not really. It's the end of the harvest season, but it also has sort of ties into the idea that the veil between the living and the dead is at its thinnest point at that time of year, right? So
right,
that's what the character is based on, is that he's looking at this time of year as the opportunity to collect souls and collect power, and also to sort of, it's not just between the living and the dead, it's between the planets of the multiverse, right? So the different realities are at their close point, kind of thing. So you have this ancient Gaelic festival in a new comic character in a new comic, and then, you know, one of Alan's characters, he's the guy on the lower left with the blue glowing sword. He's kind of got the skull crossbones.
Yeah, that's kind of it actually is reminiscent to me of the new Black Saber in the Star Wars. I'm like, okay, who is this? So who is he?
Well, it's I don't know much about him actually, but his name is Night Terror, and he's his impetus is the Black Terror, who was a comic book superhero of the
1940s. Nice.
Anybody can do what they want. So he's kind of taken that and updated it, given it a bit of a pop with that glowing blue look to it. And he's one of the good guys. The guys on the top are the villains. The guys on the bottom are the heroes.
No way.
Everybody's got the Halloween theme, right?
Yes.
Like the guy on the lower right there has got a pumpkin head kind of thing.
Yes.
Is Mr. October, who's kind of a sort of a Batman-y type character. He doesn't have powers, but he kicks butt, right? So he's got his Halloween themed gadgets and whatnot, right? So everybody's got their own shtick. Some of them are, I think they're all...
They're all originals,
except for the influence of the Black Terror on Night Terror. But yeah, and the idea, of course, is that during the campaign, people can, if they back the book, they can also get a cameo for their own characters. So if they've got...
Nice!
I think we got three levels. One is like a cover cameo. So there's up to 10 figures that you could get it on an alternate cover. There's one where it's your character can play a sort of a key role in the story. And the other is sort of just, you know, here you can show up and they're maybe they're a ghost, right? The character's dead and they're floating around in the background like Richie Rich. I mean, Casper.
Nice.
So if backers have their own characters, and it's not that easy to go publish a comic, right? But you can,
right?
You can get in on the fun and have your character show up.
Well, we're going to have to talk about more of that when we come back.
Ooh, it's commercial sign.
I'm sorry, it is.
Commercial sign. Oh, well, you know what? That's okay. That is okay. You know, we just, you know, it just means, hey, it's a chance for the listeners to, you know, go get a refill in your water, you know, go to the restroom, you know, to move quickly, though. Yeah. Move quickly, though. OK, you know, this is the intermission of the show.
No,
the intermission.
No.
Too late.
Don't go away. We'll be back with more Mark Who 42 after this.
Like science fiction? Of course you do, or you wouldn't be listening to the Geekcast Radio Network. Well, the Mark Who 42's Universe Podcast is an award-winning sci-fi radio show that's been around for over 10 years. We cover everything from Doctor Who to the MCU to pop culture and everything in between. A new show drops on Tuesday mornings on the GCRN website and all of the major podcast platforms. So listen to the Mark Who 42's Universe Podcast from the universe and beyond.
You are listening to Mark Who 42's Universe.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back from commercial. Hope you, hope you were able to get the stuff you did done. Hope you washed the dishes, started the dishwasher, did the laundry, mowed the lawn, cleaned out the gutters. Hope when you were doing the asbestos, you wore proper protection. I don't know. Am I missing anything, Vicky?
You probably forgot to change the baby.
Oh, darn. Well, you know what? That's okay. You know what? He can learn some self-reliance, dang it.
Oh, stop.
Change your own diaper.
Need serious help here. Can we get back to Infinite Souls now?
I don't know. Roy, you think we can get back to Infinite Souls?
We can. I don't remember where we left off, though.
Or is it, or wait, is it,
we
is it Infinite?
About the
is it Infinite Souls? Well, yeah.
On the cover.
Well, is it Infinite Souls, or are we talking about Poor Unfortunate Souls?
Oh,
or
no,
poor,
no,
or Poor Unfortunate no, Infinite Souls.
No.
Hey, I think I got the sequel title for you.
Oh, no, there's a mashup. I don't see Ursula on this cover, but I think we could squeeze her in right over there.
Yeah, actually, you know what I was thinking? I mean, you know, as far as like team-ups and stuff are concerned, how about, how about Ursula and Dr. Facilier? I think they could get along. I think he'd see her little, you know, her little garden of like souls. He'd be like, that's a good one. I think he'd be impressed.
Yeah, I think she'd eat him for lunch.
Gosh, well, good thing he's got friends on the other side. He's got friends on the other side.
We are so bad. Anyway,
what's this week, Masabi?
Okay, you are so bad, darling. I want to talk more about these characters because I am fascinated, or just, you know, visually, this cover art, I'm not kidding. I want to know everything you can tell me about what is coming. Or should I have you not tell me anything so that I just keep sitting there until the Kickstarter starts and I can start kicking that button until I get what I want?
Well, it's not an instantaneous process. So
I know.
I don't know how much of the plot you want to talk about, though, because like I was saying before, do you want artless spoilers from some schmuck, or do you want to experience the art?
Well, you know what? I would say, no spoilers, but how do you whet our appetites? There we go.
Ooh.
How do you whet the appetite?
Well, before the cover, besides the cover image that Vicky's drooling over.
Yeah.
Besides the cover image.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can tell you a little bit more about like the story. I'm just going to sort of read
just a wee bit
our Kickstarter page here. So it's talking about kind of what I talked about before, that there is one consistent period of time across much of the multiverse when the veil between the worlds of the living and the dead is thinnest. And also between the multiverse. Some refer to specific days or times during this period by All Souls Day or All Hallows Eve or Samhain or Dia de los Muertos, Day of the Dead. It's probably most well known as Halloween. So it's basically a former lieutenant of death, Saint Samhain, wants to increase his power. So traditionally, his role had been to garner souls for his power and for his boss Death. But he's sort of
right.
He's branching out onto his own. He's tired of being somebody's lackey, so he's decided to sort of get himself some notoriety by using the period of time across multiple universes. So because breaking the veil between the living and the dead is not a problem, he's got to first pierce the veil between universes. So within the story, he learns that this power can be his with information in the Voynich manuscript, which were sacred writings protected by the mystic sort of Dr. Strange type character, Dr. Spectral. So this is, he seizes the Voynich manuscript from Dr. Spectral and kills him in the process. So he's got the book that's going to sort of tell him, well, what do I need to do? Step one, act with an air of confidence. Step two, look people in the eye. I'm just going to read. So he then realizes that to enact the process of claiming infinite souls for the multiverse, he'll need help to gather the elements of the pentagram stone where they're hidden across the multiverse. So he summons a group of frightening allies. With the pentagram stone, he will become the master of life and death to all beings. However, the Dr. Spectral of another universe senses the attack. So he realizes he has to recover the Voynich manuscript and stop Samhain's force. And to do so, he needs to get his own group of people together. You know, if you need help and you can find them, maybe you can hire the A-team. No, not the A-team. This is... as the teams fight across the multiverses, the situation becomes more desperate. The heroes got to save lives, but of course the bad guys don't have any constraints. So it's like, can the heroes prevent the stone from being found and assembled? Will they save the universes being used by Samhain, or will they be caught in a dying one? And they've got to do it before Halloween begins, or Samhain will rip open the veils across so many universes they won't stand a chance. So this is part one of a two-part story.
This is going to be so cool.
So this gets a bunch of characters to start their stuff and do their thing. And some of them, I think these are their first appearances in comics. So if you're also like a collector nerd, it's like, oh, first appearance, first issue.
Right.
Collector's item, et cetera, right? So I think it's going to be fun and a little bit scary, hopefully. And
just, you know, scary enough so you can enjoy it and not go, nope, not reading any more of this. this from the girl who used to read Tales from the Crypt.
Ooh, the old EC stuff?
I know.
Nice.
Oh, I don't know what's wrong with me. I know what's wrong.
Hey, I've got no problems with it. Ahead of your time.
But, you know, I find it fascinating. And of course, we've seen over the histories of comics that I really enjoy the bringing multiple characters together, both multiple bad characters, multiple good characters, because to me, it's like the one character story arcs are interesting. Do not get me wrong. But I love a good combo story. I love a good team. I don't know. I always like the team stories, you know, the big baddies, the big goodies, and it's just loads of fun to kind of see what will they do next. I guess it's why I like the Super Friends in the 70s.
Well, and also by sticking all those characters together, you get all these different character dynamics that can happen, right? I mean, it's not like the original Justice League. They had pretty much distinct personalities. They're all pretty bland, generic heroes.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is true.
But, you know, with the Fantastic Four, everybody's got a different personality. So in any situation where you've got well-defined and different characterizations or personalities, then that part of it doesn't write itself, but it presents obvious opportunities of, well, this guy and this guy are not going to get along, so they're both going to be, you know, vying for power, or these two are going to act like Booster Gold and Blue Beetle, right? Like you're gonna
have
the opportunity for dynamics that aren't there when it's the same three characters every issue.
Well, and I like that, right? Especially when you see that both on the good side and the bad side, because you know, sometimes it'll be frustrating with everybody on the good side always gets along, right? Because that always happens. I enjoy it when there's a little bit of discord, even among the goodies.
It's the larger conflict, right?
Yeah. Like,
yes.
Well, I mean, you know, it's you know, you bring up the Fantastic Four. You know, you have, you know, you'll have like Johnny Storm and Ben Grimm kind of razzing on each other.
Yes.
And it's like, I love that reaction. What gets to me though is that when somebody in the name of like, oh, of, you know, giving characters more, you know, like trying to be more, you know, have characters like, you know, oh, we're trying to get them to be more real, that it's like that they're adversarial to each other to the point of like, why are you even on the same team?
Yeah, you sometimes know, that can start that to one, get so distracting.
That one gets
that fine line, and you're trying to, you know, be realistic without, going so over that, you know, I kind of view a lot of these teams, they're families, they're microcosms of families.
Oh, yeah.
And whether you're work families, personal families, or, you know, superhero teams or super baddie teams, you know, these are people who are working together, who are doing things together, who are supposed to have a common goal together. But especially on the baddie side, everyone wants to be in charge. Everyone wants to be the big baddie. And on the good, well, actually, I guess you could say that with the good guys too. You know, it's got to be frustrating because everyone must be annoyed when Superman's always the head of the pyramid on DC. I mean, that's got to be annoying.
Well, I'll say that, you know, what does get on my nerves is when, you know, Batman is at the top of the period and it's like, you know, the whole joke of, you know, prep time. Yeah, Batman's the best because he has prep time. If he has prep time, he'll punch God. You know, it's like, you know, I mean, it's okay for like on occasion for Batman to be like, whoa, this is too much for me. It's like it becomes, you know, to pull something out from Crisis on Infinite Earths, the original comic. There's a moment where you have as many superheroes as possible fighting the Anti-Monitor at the dawn of time. And Batman and Robin are just like, they're just watching. They're not doing anything. They're just watching. Robin's like, what do we do? And, you know, Batman's like, we pray for them, Robin. That's all we can do. It's like, wait a minute. You mean Batman doesn't have a plan to stop somebody who's trying to destroy all reality? Like, it's like nowadays that would be impossible. Yeah, nowadays, nowadays that exchange would be like, what do we do? And Batman would be like, I have a plan.
Blame Grant Morrison for that.
Yeah.
But it was kind of justified at the time, right? How do you justify having this dude
with
powers standing alongside a literal goddess and a guy who can move planets and stuff?
It's able to
pull his weight somehow, but then, like I say, less creative writers just came along and
just be like,
superficial aspects of that.
Yep. He's got prep time. I will
His
never.
Career I will, is prep time.
Yeah. You can't stop me. You may be the ultimate darkness, but I've dealt with darkness since I was 8 years old.
I have this sweet cape, so look out.
I've got a cape and money.
That said, he is my favorite.
Hey, I got a golden lasso, so I beat all of you guys. Oh, I forgot. I have an invisible jet, so I wipe both of you guys off.
Well, or, you know, or hey, it's like, hey, I've got this green ring that lets me come up with anything I can think of. And it's like, hey, here's an image of your parents.
But the real counter is, at least I had to earn my abilities. They weren't just handed.
Ouch. Ooh, well, you ouch. Guys are mean superheroes.
Oh, you're born on Krypton? Oh, that must have been so difficult, man. Oh, you were molded out of clay and given the powers of the gods? Oh, how difficult for you. I had to watch my parents be murdered in front of my very eyes. And I dedicated my life
you
to
guys play dirty.
My mind and damn. Body.
Well, but then, of course, you know, Green Lantern's like, yeah, well, I saw my dad die in a fiery plane crash. It's like, you know.
And Flash Green Arrow's like, I never had an original idea in my life.
Green Arrow's like.
Arrowcade.
Well, no, I think Green Arrow would be like, I was Tom Hanks in Castaway, but I had a freaking bow and arrow. I didn't have a volleyball with a smiley
face.
Are
you saying that if he had Wilson, he would have been different?
He would fight crime with a
green volleyball.
Volleyball. People in the head with it. My boxing glove volleyball.
Oh, dear Lord in heaven. That is so bad. That is so awful. My. But I
you
have,
know what? We got
I
a new
a
we got
question.
A new Elseworlds. Quick, let's okay, wait. Alan worked for Marvel, but does he have any buddies at DC?
Oh, he might.
You know what? We got to talk to him. We got to say, you know what? We got an Elseworlds here. Castaway mixed with Green Arrow.
No. No, do not suggest that at all. Please, dear God in heaven, no. I have a question. So since this is part one of two for the Infinite Soul, of course you're going to give this massive cliffhanger, because why not? So when would you guys plan on doing the second Kickstarter? How much time do you think will pass? You're not going to wait till next Halloween, are you?
Oh, my God, Vicky. That's so
I'm
far.
I'm sorry. Don't do this to me.
yeah, that's a good question. I don't think we'd wait until next Halloween to do it. I think the most reasonable approach is I typically start the next campaign once the last one's fulfilled.
Well, that makes sense. That makes sense.
So, you know,
because then we could throw in a little Christmas theme to it, you know, and.
Well, we were talking about doing
Krampus. We gotta have Krampus
holiday, right? Like we could have the St. Patrick's Day themed heroes and villains. Could have President's so Day, bad. Where it's
no,
like
you
know,
no.
Dead presidents come back to life, and they, you know, Lincoln.
Oh my God!
He was a vampire hunter, so
President's
he's already got
Day zombie edition. Is that what you're telling me?
It could be.
Oh geez.
bunny rabbits and
that one might actually sell.
Eggs. Well, if you want to sell, you've got boobs is one selling point. You know. And your other selling point, if you got a niche group is furries. So
okay, there we go. That
you just have to know your audience, Vicky.
That's
go
true.
Ask
good.
Well, what about
good
okay?
Ideas,
what about all right?
Ideas.
What about hey? What about Labor Day? The Labor Day special. It's just a bunch of heroes not doing anything, taking the day off.
Taking the day off, playing
the
video
day
game.
Off. Yeah.
In
yeah,
this
there
one,
you go.
I play an office worker. Spreadsheet. Avoiding. Call boss.
Oh no! I've been called into HR. I shouldn't have commented about her dress.
Like what do these fantastic heroes do to fantasize? Like we could play a video game where we're them. What are they doing? Oh, sit in traffic.
Oh.
Do
they play the old Paperboy video game?
Oh god. Oh hey, yeah, there you go. I can see that.
I'm just trying to think about what would they do? What would be the most boring and banal
mundane
thing that they could possibly do?
Let's sit down and do our taxes for the Justice League. Well, I think we can write off this as a business expense, and then under Article 17 of the.
Well, you know what? They can.
Some of them are aliens. Do they have to pay taxes? Oh, they don't get paid.
Do they have citizenship? I think they. I think if they have citizenship,
do they get paid? And if they don't keep, yeah, well, the Justice Hall, that is
the Hall
on American
Justice, yeah,
soil, so you got a problem there.
Well, actually, no, wait, hang on. No, I don't think you have a problem with the Hall of Justice. Because if I recall correctly, it is given embassy status.
Ooh. No taxes need to be filed there.
I guess it'd be dependent on whether it's a for-profit company or a non-profit or a, like, unless he's an interesting.
Well, if it's got embassy status, then we got a whole nother thing going on.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's got embassy. I think it's considered, I seem to recall somewhere that it would be considered an embassy.
Because then aren't they citizens of the world?
There you go. I think so. Yeah. Yeah. So it'd be, you know, it probably has embassy status, and it would have the same, probably the same rights and the same rights as, like, for example, the United Nations building.
That's why they can't get speeding tickets and whatnot.
Aha.
Well, not to mention, I mean, do you want to be the one to put a speeding ticket on the Batmobile? Like, good luck with that.
No man is above the law.
You know? No, but, you know, you know Bats. He'd probably be like, you know, he'd probably be like, I'm trying to chase down the Joker.
Yeah, not my...
What are the traffic rules? Did I tell you that my parents have been dead since I was 8 years old? Yes, you did.
Okay, you can't milk the dead parents for everything. The judge will just laugh you out of the courtroom, babe. So...
So you all have to live in darkness consistently. I may have money, but it will not replace the hole in my heart. I don't think I can love you. I have to live in the darkness.
Aren't the Waynes, like, the only ones that had the decency to stay dead?
Uncle Ben.
Were they resurrected in...
Well, no, Uncle Ben has stayed dead. Yeah, Uncle Ben has stayed dead.
Are they, like, the only fixed points in time in either DC or Marvel?
Possibly. Oh, Jesus. Oh, man. Oh, geez. I'm trying to think. Wait. Okay. Uncle Ben is still dead. The Waynes are still dead.
Bucky's not.
Bucky's, yeah, no. They brought Bucky back. They brought Jason Todd back. They so far have not permanently brought back Captain Mar-Vell. Ooh. I know that they have done temporary resurrections, but they haven't done, like, the full-blown, nope, he's back among the living. That's it. Period. The end. I know they brought Jor-El back.
Oh, really?
They brought Jor-El back. Yeah, with New 52 and Rebirth, it was revealed he was brought back. I don't know if he's still around, though. I don't know if he's still around.
Wasn't there a series where Krypton was kept in some sort of, for lack of a better word, snow globe for a series or something?
No.
What am I remembering?
No. What you're thinking is the Bottled City of Kandor.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
What happened, and I think like before they did the whole New 52, that there was a point where, you know, Kandor, I think, was grown to full size and settled on a world, and they called it New Krypton.
That's what I'm thinking of. Okay.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that was the New Krypton.
You know, things kind of muddle around in there, and they muddle to the surface of the brain, and you're like, okay, I have this.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. You know what?
Something once.
You know what? Don't worry about it, because sometimes it's like the way a character's been changed. I'm like, wait, so they brought them back and they did this? What? So wait, they turned him into a heroin addicted beat poet who doesn't actually have radioactive superpowers? When did this happen?
Like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. I have one rule, and it's like, you can play around a little bit, like, with an origin story, but if you change the origin story so much, like if the Waynes suddenly were not dead, to where everything about that origin story just didn't exist anymore. You can't do that. You can't, like, when you were toying with the Andrew Garfield Spider-Mans, and they were going to have, if they never made the third movie, where his parents were going to come back and they weren't really dead, and they cut those scenes from the first two movies, but they were going to have it in the third movie where his parents were alive and he didn't have to live with Uncle Ben and Aunt May. And I'm like, okay, you guys changed way too much of this character's origin story and his whole purpose for being, and you've ruined the character because he has to be that way. Peter Parker can't be Peter Parker if you change his whole purpose for being.
You know what? They actually did bring the parents back at one point in the 90s.
No.
Yes. Now, here's the thing. It was later revealed that they weren't actually, you know, it's like, supposedly what happened was, oh, you know, they were actually PO, you know, they were actually like imprisoned, not killed. And then, oh, they were freed and they came back into Peter's life. But then it was revealed, it was like, psych! It was actually a plot by Green Goblin Chameleon to mess with Peter Parker. They were actually clones.
It's like an origin is mom and dad were in a plane. The plane crashed. No bodies were ever found. That's creating an ambiguity enough that a future writer can go wherever they want with it. Like, here's the parents. They weren't really dead. It may seem like a cheat, but it doesn't really contradict the origin. The only problem is the next writer can come along and say, oh, they were dead all along. Well, now what am I reading? What is that? Yeah. Doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
I just there's a couple of things that it is, and I realize that some of these characters have been along long before I was, and yeah, the stories have continued long past my heyday of reading them. And I just sometimes I'm like, okay, y'all are messing too much with them. I know you have to tell new stories and all, but I think y'all drank some weird Kool-Aid. And maybe not so much. Stop, please stop. But it's okay. I digress.
It's okay. But
I'm fine now.
Oh, but now here's a question. Here's a question for you, Roy. You know where? You know we're getting down to the wire, as far as like the subspace radio stuff, the stuff that we have to have commercials for. Where can they find the Kickstarter and when is it going to be launched?
So right now, if you go to Kickstarter and you search for Infinite Souls, it'll take you up to what's called the pre-launch page, which is basically, hey, this project is coming up. Click on this button to be notified. So what'll happen is if you click on that button, then the day that it launches, there'll be an automatic email that goes out to you and say, hey, this project is launched. Right now, we're thinking of launching it Tuesday. So get in there.
Okay.
For Infinite Souls. Awesome. And obviously, we'll do updates throughout the campaign.
So, yeah. And that would be Tuesday the 18th. Tuesday, yeah, October 18th. Yep. Okay. Okie dokie. So, yeah. You know what? On that note, oh, Lordy. Everybody who's listening to us on Subspace, bad news. We have to go. I'm so sorry. We're out of time. But you know what? Listen to the regular podcast version because we'll have extra innings and we'll chat more with Roy. Maybe, you know, talk more about the Kickstarter. Maybe talk more about influences, not just the Marvel horror or DC horror stuff. Let's see if there's other horror stuff that influenced him. But yeah, that's all going to be on the regular podcast version. So yes, come join us there. It's the after party. That's where things really go insane. I do the Vincent Price laugh, but I don't know. I don't think I could do it justice. I don't need the ghost of Vincent Price haunting me.
Nobody needs that.
Yeah.
Don't go away. We'll be back with more Mark Who 42 after this.
Because the world needs another movie podcast.
The GeekCast Radio Network presents for your listening pleasure, The Cinema Geek.
Hosted by Amanda, Kevin, Matt, and Dan.
Each week we dive headfirst in the landscape of movies as we discuss movie news, play movie games,
go in-depth on reviews,
and even have a top 10 countdown or two.
Also, don't miss our director retrospective series, where we review noted directors' movies film by film.
Bottom line is, if you love movies and love podcasts, you need to experience The Cinema Geeks.
You can find us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, or geekcastradio.com.
Welcome, foolish mortals.
to the bonus section of Mark Who 42. If you're listening to us, that's because you're on the podcast version, not on the Subspace Radio version. So, hey, welcome, welcome. So we're talking with Roy Johnson about the latest Kickstarter he's involved with, Infinite Souls in Time for Halloween.
That's right.
Do you want to get the physical or the digital copy?
Why
do you want
both?
A cameo? We'll help indeed. Yeah, I can't sing.
Oh, that
that's okay. We like you anyway.
Yeah, I think if Joanne and Shauna from Lovely's Cosplay were here, we might be able to get something from them. But alas, they're not in this episode. May have to do another one later and have them back on. But yeah. Yeah, so we were talking, yeah, we were talking about Infinite Souls, we talked comics, we did talk a little bit about, you know, the old Marvel horror comics, and we mentioned DC horror comics a little bit. Is there anything else, I mean, any other influences besides comics that that helped with this one?
Well, I mean, Alan's kind of the writer guy, but he's citing mostly the Marvel comics from the 70s that we were talking about, Werewolf by Night and Tomb of Dracula and that kind of thing. But I mean, horror, a different media require a different approach, but at the end of the day, horror is horror, right? And I like Stephen King's take on writing horror, classifying it into three different elements of it, right? There's terror, horror, and revulsion, I think, is how he put it. So terror is the creepiness leading up to what is it? What's in the attic in that rocking chair? What is it? Oh my God, I'm so scared. The horror is when you spin it around and it's, you know, Aunt Martha is a Cthulian entity. And then the revulsion is this sort of the horror aftertaste of where you're just not even necessarily thinking of it. And then when you do, it's like, your skin crawls.
Yeah.
So proper horror, I think, has all three of those elements to it. Is you've got the creepingness is probably the hardest one, and it's the sweetest one, right? It's the most difficult to maintain. You've got people have to care about your characters and what happens to them. And then it's the lead up to the constant escalation of tension, right? Like what is the thing in the attic? When are we going to find out? No, the horror part is the easy part. Boo. That's what a lot of modern horror movies are, just stupid jump scares without any kind of connection to either the horror or the revulsion or caring about the characters. It's the part of the movie where everything gets quiet and there's negative space on the screen and there's a loud noise. Well, that's just startling. That's not scary. And then the revulsion is if you've done your job on the other two, right? So, you know, hopefully the feeling we get from it is more of a sustained creepiness throughout the story. And then there's the horror of, you know, I've kind of said what he's doing, but it's that creepiness and the atmosphere of the thing that's the hardest to maintain. And so that's kind of the best part of it, I think, is, you know, to me, everybody's different. Like you can get scared if there's buckets of blood being thrown at the wall or whatever. I mean, there are tremendous achievements in special effects, but it doesn't mean it's an engaging story, right? Like if you go back to The Exorcist, right? Everybody's seen it, so it's a cultural touchstone, so you can, but basically, like, it was more about the growing tension and creepiness of what is happening to this little girl? It's bad enough what's happening to this innocent little girl, right? So your parental and human instincts are brought out of must protect girl. And then the mom is going through hell as this is happening to her daughter. And they established, you know, this almost fairy tale like relationship between the mom and the daughter at the beginning, right? It was perfect. They were the perfect mommy and daughter because they only have 5 or 10 minutes to make the audience care about them, right? And then you've got this escalating set of tensions and horrors that just everything makes you care about them more, and then things get worse. So it's just that creepiness, the tension, and what it's building to. Well, a hint, The Exorcist is probably going to be a big, there'll be an exorcism in the movie.
Yeah.
But the problem with The Exorcist, he just punches it out of her at the end. Like if you boil the whole movie down, you got a priest who's an ex-boxer punching this little girl in the face. Hey, get out of there. What are you? Stop doing that. I'll give you a noogie, mister. And then him. Right? But like that's not a move. There's jump scares in that movie, but they're earned jump scares.
Yeah.
There's drawing you in, right? And it's another thing I was noting, people will do reaction videos to them, right? Which is basically just a highlight reel. But there's also this sort of breaking of a successive escalating breaking of social taboos, right? Where
yes,
tells her mom to piss off, she pees on the carpet, they take her to the hospital, and she tells the guy, "Don't touch my junk," and she swears. And so there's all these little breakdowns, and then the breakdown of the mother-daughter relationship, which I was not registering in any way other than if I'm going to write something, I'd like to write something like this. What are they doing? Well, yeah, there's the scary bits, but there are also these little progressive breakdowns of these taboos or crossing of socially acceptable lines that goes through the movie, but they don't, you know, lampshade them with like, huh? Huh? Hey, what we're doing here? Let's put a jump scare in. So anyway, nothing to do with the book per se, other than that I think that's a much better approach than just trying to boo, scare someone, like, who cares?
Yeah.
To that, right? Or like a more modern movie like Hereditary, which for whatever reason I didn't find all that scary, because I think I was wrapped up in, I'm gonna actually try to understand themes and junk in a movie when I watched it. So there's a scene at the beginning where I think it's the older brother is in class, and the teacher is an English teacher, and he's talking about tragedies. You know, which is more tragic, when the stuff happens to the characters and they don't know what the heck's going on, or when they have been warned that all this stuff's going to happen and it happens anyway? Because then I was just like, oh, I guess that's what they're going to do in the movie. They're going to have little hints of stuff that happens, and then they did. So I was like, oh, I got the little symbol on the wall, and now it's on the light post. And, you know, they had the creepy guy at the funeral who shows up later and is standing in the closet. And a lot of it went beyond me. I didn't see it. I didn't pick up on all the symbolism, but I knew these characters are being told by the world around them, and they're not really picking up on it. And then it's all, you know, the symbolism of what's hereditary. Is it mental illness, or is it demonic possession? And it's kind of like, well, it turns out it's demonic possession that's making you think you're crazy. Spoilers, sorry. But there's like, you know, so much depth you can bring to it, even if it's
right. A
whole story, right? It's kind of attacking your primal.
I think that there's so much horror out there that forgets about depth. You know, it's what was beautiful about Gothic horror, what was beautiful about Hitchcock. It's there were multiple layers. Nothing was just, I mean, Eli Roth is immensely talented, but to me, his stuff's just gross. I don't want gross. And I think that you see that in some of the different mediums of horror, where if it makes my mind spin, not my stomach, but my mind spin, I enjoy it to a certain extent, probably shouldn't, but because I like things that make me think, I like things that make me question, I like things that make me go, what did I just see? What did I just do?
Yep.
Did you see?
I hear that. I hear that. I think one of my favorite horror movies has to be the original Wicker Man. Like, I'm talking the original.
Oh,
I'm talking,
my,
you know,
Lord, yes.
Yeah, because the thing is that it is, it's all about, you know, it's all about the psychological thing. You know, it's all psychological. It's all, you know, and then plus the other, you know, and then plus just the horror of the ending where,
yeah,
the character's damnation came out of his own actions. Like, he just, you know, he damned himself.
Right.
And then also just the horror of the ending where he's in the Wicker Man, he's, you know, and then as he's burning to death, he's trying to outdo the, you know, the cultists who are all there singing, and he's trying to pull out, you know, all these prayers to God, you know, kind of like, and just right. the whole, you know, that whole thing, it just, it, like,
the,
you know, that to me is what makes it, yeah, exactly.
The juxtaposition and
yep.
the, you know, when you think about how old that movie is and how well it did the twist and the, okay, I expected something. This is not what I expected. What the heck? And the bad guys won at the end.
Oh yeah!
Oh my God!
So,
yeah. Whoa!
Movie about a man out buying wicker. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, that's what it was.
Well, it's not. Well, I'll
store. Oh. Yep,
I'll say this. It's not about Nicolas Cage punching women out while wearing a bear suit.
Did you ever see Funny Games?
Funny Games.
Funny Games.
I
don't remember that one.
It's probably more technically a thriller than a horror per se.
Yeah, no, I don't think I've seen Funny Games. I saw The Game with Michael Douglas, but I don't think I've seen Funny Games.
So Funny Games is like a...
I know it. I did not see it, but I did read the script on this one.
Oh, really?
Oh my. Yes. Okay, yeah, this is a psychological, what the heck am I doing with this movie?
Yeah, it's kind of a meta commentary on thrillers and why do we
yes.
watch them? Why do we want to see people get in these terrible, terrible situations, right? And it kind of dissects thrillers and dissects and indicts the audience who's watching them.
Yes.
But I think it's overly simplistic, but it's because there's kind of the point of we want the good guys to overcome.
Right.
We don't want to see them put through the ringer. We want to see them put through the ringer so that they then overcome all the terrible things, which I think maybe he was missing. But it's worth a watch. Like, there's the whatever, the European one, and then there's the American one. And it's like, I remember talking to somebody about it, and they, wow, so is it violent? And I'm thinking, like, there's implied violence.
Right.
There's a lot that happens. Like, there's a part very early on, ooh, the home invaders, they kill the family dog, because usually the dog is like, woof, woof, what's wrong?
Right.
To me, and they kill the dog. And it's
always
like,
gotta do
they don't
that
show
person.
That. They don't show the dog.
No.
Getting killed. And then there's a bit where I think they hit the husband with a golf club. And it's like, do they even show? So it's not necessarily being salacious in and of itself, but it's kind of like, these are the kind of movies you guys like to watch. Why do you like
yes.
to watch movies? What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yes.
Okay,
it's a very
something
interesting. And it is, it's very much like, this is what you wanted. What's your problem? This is what you wanted. This is what we do. And I think that too many audiences didn't get it. They didn't realize that they were, they wanted what they expected, you know? I don't know.
Well,
I thought it was
you go into
fascinating.
A movie expecting something.
Yeah.
Is that
to me,
reasonable?
That's why it was actually in some ways more scary, because have we gotten to the point that we look at something like this and we go, okay, good guys didn't win, bad guys won, all the rules are broken, all the rules were just a fallacy anyway, we gave ourselves a false sense of security that the good guys would win. It's a very psychologically disturbing film, because you realize, yeah, you really do expect the good guys to win at the end. And when they don't, it's not very comfortable.
Yeah, no, that's, oh,
I think validates our wanting, the reason we want to see them is because at the end we want the heroes to get away. Or, you know, they're
well,
and then,
well, at least, yeah, at least that's, yeah, that's like our, that's, yeah, that's what we want. That's what we expect to happen, you know, especially like I think the other, I've only seen this once. I didn't enjoy it as much, but I still, I found it interesting what they did. There's that, mm-hmm. There's that film, what's it called? Drag Me to Hell.
Mm-hmm.
The one with, the one with that, it does what it says on the, you know, on the label. It's, you know, about a woman who eventually ends up going to, you know, she's cursed and she eventually ends up going to hell. And it's like, it, I think one of the things that does is, It taps into one of those classic things of like the whole, you know, that whole sort of old school horror, in the sense of like, yeah, you know, bad things are going to happen to people, even if, I mean, okay, she's not, you know, she's not exactly in all that innocent, but what she did, was it really worth getting cursed and going to hell?
Right.
Like that becomes the question. So, you know, it's really, that's another good one. And actually, to me, feels a lot, you know, also has a lot with the Wicker Man, in the sense that,
you get that very false sense of security.
Right.
And Raimi's very good at that. And of course, you should have known that with Raimi, that there was no way, even for that brief moment when you thought everything was going to be fine. Of course it wasn't. It's a Raimi film. There was no way it was going to end well. I just there is something that I find very powerful about the films that I don't necessarily feel good about. I don't necessarily, I can't say I necessarily enjoy myself, but that make me think and contemplate. And to me, I enjoy the horror that does that to me, that makes me think about deeper issues than maybe it is on face value.
Yeah, no, I hear that. Sheesh, I'm trying to.
I know, we kind of went down a really deep, ugly path there.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, we're definitely in a deep, yeah, no, definitely.
Okay, let's get light and airy and talk about horror film in comic books. It's
last night.
Mm-hmm.
I did, you know, my wife and I, we decided to, you know, get into the Halloween mood, and we watched, the Addams Family, which, you know, the 1991 live action version,
mm-hmm.
which I feel still holds up and
does absolutely
dang, you know, the chemistry between Angela Houston and Raul Julia.
Oh my Lord. You feel every ounce of that, don't you?
Oh yeah, but we started things off with the Garfield Halloween special, and
what?
Yeah, we started off by watching Garfield Halloween.
Okay, I still love you anyway.
Okay, hey, you know, it's a good Halloween special. Don't knock it.
Okay.
You know, it's a good Halloween special, and surprisingly enough, it's got some serious nightmare fuel to it.
Well, dang.
I mean, seriously, it's, you know, the whole thing, you know, Garfield and Odie go out to trick or treat. And at one point they end up in this really creepy house on like an island somewhere. And it turns out that the house is cursed because, you know, there were pirates that stashed their treasure and who basically said, hey, one day we're going to come back for this treasure, even if we have to rise from the grave to do it. And, you know, lo and behold, that's exactly what they do. So, I mean, you have this really scary moment.
That would definitely fuel some nightmares for the average child.
I still remember watching it as a kid, and to me, I'm just like, wow, this is holy moly.
A little darker than maybe it should be, but okay.
Yeah, well, and this is going to sound blasphemous, I actually put it at a higher pedestal than it's The Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown.
Oh, bite your tongue.
Well, but see, here's the thing. Here's the thing, though. This is the thing I don't like about The Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. That basically the gist of the story is Linus is a gullible little poop who wasted his time. And it's like, I hate that. I hate that. I hate that that's the whole, you know, that's the whole gist of the story. Because, like, come on.
No,
you know,
I
hate
that.
The fact that, you know,
that.
Like, poor Linus doesn't, you know, poor Linus is just, yeah, you know, his Halloween gets ruined because he has a belief, and it's like, the belief is wrong. It's wrong.
True.
And you're an idiot, Linus.
I know. I think for me, it's just nostalgia. And that's my thing with The Great Pumpkin.
Yeah.
So. You're right. Yeah. It's not.
I mean, I think
it just.
I think I enjoy more.
Let's just move back to the Addams Family because that one holds up really well.
Oh yes, that's a classic, and you gotta love how, in both with live action, you have the old series, the old TV series, mm-hmm. and then you have the 91 movie, and it's funny. It's funny though because in both cases, the guy who played Lurch also did work on Star Trek.
But of course.
Yeah, you know, you have the
because
original.
That just makes sense.
Well, yeah, no, the original Lurch was in that that original series episode. Mm-hmm. I want to say it's What Little Girls Are Made Of.
I can picture the episode, but yeah, I don't know if I remember the title name.
Yeah, I think I want to say it's
the alien that was mute.
Yeah, and then you have. Whatchamacallit, you have Addams Family, the one who played Lurch in the Addams Family, played
and
Mr. Holm in Next Gen.
Manservant,
yeah.
Yes.
Who's supposed to be very talkative, but the only thing we ever heard him say is, thank you for the drinks, like in his first appearance. With you know, Riker, I think it was like Riker and Picard exchanging looks and being like, wow, he speaks.
Yeah.
But I don't know. What about you? What about you, Roy? Have you started any Halloween-y viewing?
Not really, but I've got a stack of Blu-rays and things. Like, I haven't seen Shining in years, right? So
yeah,
that'll be on the list. And might be time for a rewatch of Fright Night, which is not necessarily straight up.
Ooh, the original one, right?
The original, yeah.
There's only the original one.
Yeah.
No,
maybe Hannibal. I haven't seen that in.
Oh, ooh. Wow.
I don't think I saw Hannibal.
Really good, but.
Yeah, I don't think I saw Hannibal. I know I've seen Silence of the Lambs.
Have you seen Manhunter?
Manhunter. I have not, and I've been curious about it.
I have heard about that one, and I have not seen that one, and I keep thinking that might be something that I should add to my list.
I would say it is. It's very 80s in a way, like you can tell when it was made, but it's very not dated at the same time. You know what I mean? Like stylistically, you can tell it was when it was made, but it's not like
right.
It's stuck in that period or anything like that. Right. So it's like this is an adaptation of the Red Dragon novels.
Right.
Yeah.
So the weird thing is you've got the first movie was based on Red Dragon. Then you've got Silence of the Lambs. And then I think they remade the Red Dragon one with the Hulk or whatever. And then they
Norton, right?
Yeah.
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 So I've only read Silence of the Lambs. Choice.
But, good actor. But I think that some of the characters he's played, I don't care how good an actor you are, sometimes you just don't, no matter how good you are, I don't know if you can convey that good of a choice. I have to tell you something, so Rob Zombie. Now there is a Halloween person.
Oh yeah. I have not seen the Munsters yet though.
I'm still digesting it. It was not what I expected. If you've seen any of Rob Zombie's films, you will be confused. It is not a Rob Zombie typical film. It's pretty much rated G.
Okay, that's the only Rob Zombie and rated G are like two words I never thought I'd hear in the same sentence.
Yeah. Now I will be honest, I've seen several of Rob's movies, and to this day they still haunt me.
Yep. I did see what was it? House of a Thousand Corpses. That one I've seen. One I've seen, and you know what? Kudos, props to the late great Sid Haig, because yes. Captain Spaulding seems like a great, you know.
Well, there is a Doctor character. Who connection to the Munsters.
Yeah, doesn't the movie have Sylvester McCoy?
Yes, it does. He plays Igor.
Yep. Yeah, I remember hearing that, okay.
I don't know. I recommend watching it just because. But, you know, you kind of feel like you have to go and pull out the original Halloween. Because, I mean, I wasn't a fan of Zombie's remakes of Halloween just because I understand what he was trying to do. But I don't know. The original Halloween, which my brother and I snuck and watched. there was something pure about it. And there was something magical about it when you do something that's, you know, I call that guerrilla filmmaking, and that there's something just really pure about it that just I think Rob overthought it when he was doing the remake and just threw too much, you know, threw the whole kitchen sink at it, and that's where I didn't enjoy it. Plus it was just too much Rob Zombie, and God bless him, love his music. Tone down the movies, dear God, please, honey. But I kind of feel that, and I realize I'm taking this off the cover art, I kind of feel that this Infinite Souls, I'm feeling a little bit of, and correct me if I'm wrong, Roy, I feel a little 70s and a little 80s nostalgia in that. I'm feeling a little bit of both in there. And I think that's one of the reasons I'm enjoying looking at this image, is that I love some of the 70s horror, a little bit of the 80s horror. And that's where I start to taper off.
Well, that's kind of where our influences lay, right? Like,
yeah,
most of the people in the group are late 40s, early 50s.
Right. Okay. 80s, so they're my age. Right? So.
That's kind of where we're picking stuff up from, like, but there is the opportunity you can work in, why don't we have an EC Comics type of throwback in this issue? Like, you could turn it into, you don't want to get into a pick the reference kind of game, but you can also always
work
things in, as long as it fits organically with the story, right? So
right,
you're gonna bring influences you don't even know about, right? Oh yeah that thing is from Bride Frankenstein. Or that from Invasion of the Body Snatchers or whatever, right? Like, you're going to bring...
Yeah, because even when I don't recognize either the Easter egg or the influence, I enjoy the... sometimes I call it the essence or the emotion that something gives off, where I don't have to say, oh, that was influenced by this character, or this is a takeoff of, you know, like Dr. Sinister and Dr. Strange. It doesn't have to be that, but where I feel a nostalgia because there's something about it that reminds me of something from my childhood, whether it was the 70s or when I was older in the 80s, and I recognize something. And I feel that in these characters, that I feel like there's something I remember, not a specific character, not a specific movie, not a specific book or whatever comic book, just a, oh, this makes me think of things from my past. And that's kind of cool because there's definitely, I mean, I guess we're retro now. That's always weird for me. I'm retro. But, you know, as we're talking about the things that new and old that inspire us and we enjoy and we like, and I think that it's how, I don't even know the right words to use, but I love seeing how people are inspired by their own childhoods, their own loves and likes, and even when it's not a tit for tat, you know, I think it's just really amazing when you have people who are creative, and it's amazing. This cover art is telling me a story, and I don't even know the story yet. Even with what you told me earlier, I still don't know really this whole story, and I'm intrigued and I want to know more because you've been influenced by the same things I've been influenced, but even somebody younger than us could look at this and go, oh, this is interesting. Oh, this is intriguing. Oh, this is kind of a cool looking character. Even if just one character catches their eye, then the next thing you know, they're doing the Kickstarter and waiting on the arrival of their comic book, just like the old days.
Yeah. New comic book day, new comic book day.
Woohoo!
It's kind of a sweet spot, if you can hit it, of
yeah.
It evokes a vague feeling of familiarity. You can't put your finger on it.
Right.
So it's like, you know, scent can take you back to a particular instance or time. Oh, a time I was at grandma's and she made that grape Kool-Aid and I remember the smell of that.
Nice
and
job. So
where if you're not looking at it going, oh, that's Michael Myers from Halloween, but instead it's subconsciously evoking the feelings that you might have associated with that character and you can't put your finger on exactly how, right? Like,
right.
Experience stuff, particularly when you're getting a little older, stuff in your childhood has seeped into your subconscious and unconscious, right? Shaped whatever, but you may be pulling on those things completely inadvertently, or you may be combining them with some brand new idea, and you've got, you know, a synthesis of those two things to create a new one. But when it's expressed, somebody's looking at it, that feels like, I don't know, that reminds me of when I was a kid and I was doing this thing and that thing, or it just provides enough of a, not necessarily nostalgia, but like a familiarity without knowing what it is.
Right.
So it sounds like we're doing our job.
That's a very a cool thing to kind of pull on, because you know, when you think about it, there've been so many stories, whether you're talking comics, books, movies, TV shows, whatever it is, there's been so many stories over the last just 100 years. You know, we could go back even further to mythology, you know, last several thousand years. So there's all these stories that are in our collective human consciousness. And so, you know, stories such as, various demons, creatures of the undead, creatures of the demonic worlds, whatever those demonic worlds may be, whether they're hell or some other sort of whatever it may be called, it just, there are these stories that have been told for centuries upon centuries. So it's fascinating the way that we continue to tell these campfire stories, these fairy tales, these cautionary tales, whatever they may be. And we still love them. You know, we still enjoy, when you think about it, fairy tale stories are scary, you know, especially when you read them without being all cleaned up. When we like to be a little bit scared, sometimes we like to be a lot bit scared. And I think that it's just, human psyche, fascinating. Human brain, absolutely marvelous.
Well, like that Star Trek The Next Generation episode, Darmok, right? Where you can just say a couple of words.
Yeah.
And it brings to mind all of the elements that are associated with it that you're familiar with.
Yes.
And as an individual, you're bringing, yeah, you've got that original core idea that you've also connected like to five others. Because, oh yeah, I saw those two movies on a movie marathon one night with my best friend. It has nothing to do with each other, but you're always going to associate whatever Fright Night with Roger Rabbit or something, right?
Right.
So all those unintended or unknown subconscious associations can be brought out by just one thing. So it's like you're really doing all the work. The writer is just putting an idea down and relying on in part on you to the iceberg of your brain, that whatever it is 8/9 below the surface is feeding into. I get it. It feels like there's sometimes you'll read a story, like I remember reading some Alan Moore something or other, I don't know. And it was actually a Swamp Thing one where Batman appears and there's a character who is providing a narration, and he's basically saying in world superheroes are stupid and evil and Superman is a despot and they're whatever, these people who lord their superiority above us and da da da. Meanwhile, it shows Batman has got like been stabbed in the gut or he's broken a rib and he's desperately calling for Alfred to get him. And then on the surface, it's kind of an obvious juxtapositioning of the dude is got all this nonsense about whatever. And then the quote unquote reality is Alfred, I'm freaking dying here. I think I pierced a lung. Can you help me out? And it's obvious or whatever. But I just remember the very first time I read that, I reacted on a very emotional level, where I wasn't analyzing any of that, and I wasn't thinking about that. The thing just worked as a narrative without me having any conscious idea of why. But then, you know, later you go back and you look at it and you can't step in the same river twice and all that crap, where I'm looking at it more from I'm not quite getting that emotional hit because I'm now sort of figuring out what he's doing, but it was just a very simple technique that also brings in all your knowledge of superheroes and how people in the real world will think that they're silly, or that, you know, Alan has always brought up the idea that in real life, the only people that put on masks and did stuff were like the frickin' Klan, you know, like heroes.
Yeah.
So if you try to evaluate these fictional creatures in real world terms, you're going to come up with douchebags. But so it just in that simple technique of comparing these two things, I'm bringing in all this gibberish in my head or in my gut that I know.
Yeah.
You know, so horror is obviously not generally considered some cerebral endeavor. It's to hit you in the gut and in ways you're not even consciously thinking about. Like, you know, you can throw a bunch of bugs in the movie and there are people who are scared of bugs, but who cares?
I know my the scene that freaks my my wife out with Temple of Doom, you know, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, is the scene where, you know, the scene where they're in that hidden corridor and there's just all these bugs. And then you have, you know, Willie Scott sticking her hand in the, you know, in that little opening. And then, you know, there's stuff like crawling all over her.
Yeah. And there's like stuff like that. But like, I remember the first time I saw, like when I was a kid, I'd seen horror movies, but it wasn't really my bag. I was more science fiction and whatever.
Yeah, so one night, that's the same. Me too.
We had, it must have been like a Movie Network free weekend or something. I don't know. And they were airing The Return of the Living Dead. That's the one that's not Romero. That's the one with the other guy.
Yeah.
And in the movie, that sense of existential dread and horror was what got me, because horror movies I was familiar with, well, there's Dracula, you can take him in the heart or burn him in the sunlight, and there's a werewolf, you can shoot him with a silver bullet. And even the reference that they make in the movie to the original movie is, oh, you just chop their heads off or shoot them in the head, that's fine. It's like, none of that is working.
Yeah, the rules are out the door. Yeah,
take over the world. And I was like, just like, what the heck is this? No, there's no way to stop them. That's not fair. That's not playing in the horror rules. And it was so great because it was like, there's more at stake. So there's, on the one hand, you know, you can't stop them. On the other, there's potentially more at stake than quote unquote just dying, in that you can turn into one of these things, right? There's the fate
versus
death, right? Yeah. And that freaked me out. Also the term.
Oh yeah. Well, you know what? On that note, and such a wonderful cheery note to leave off on. Yep. End of the world. End of the world and turning into the undead for forever. Unfortunately, we do have to go. You know, we no more bonus time. But hey, first off, Roy, thank you once again for coming on and, you know, shooting the breeze with us and promoting the Kickstarter, which is supposed to go up October 18th, Tuesday. So, you know, hey, go to Kickstarter.com, look up Infinite Souls, and yeah, donate some money. You know, maybe you might even get yourself a cameo. Sure. You know, not to mention, hey, comics. Getting comics, always a good thing.
Comics, always great.
Always great. Exactly. Exactly. And if you disagree, shush, go sit in the corner. But yeah, next episode, we are actually going to be reviewing The Power of the Doctor. So yeah, we've done episodes where we've talked about Jodie's tenure in the TARDIS. But you know what? It's coming to an end. And let's see, is it going to end with a bang or a whimper? We'll see. We'll see. And you'll get to hear what we think. So yeah, from all of us here at Marku 42, this is Eduardo M. Fryer with Vicky Jacobowski and special guest Roy Johnson of Standard Comics saying, hey, you know, be good to each other. And, you know, when going for those Halloween deals, especially like the day after when all the candy goes on sale, be good to each other. All right? Share the love.
Thanks for listening to Marku 42's Universe with hosts Mark Baumgarten, Eduardo M. Fryer, Zion Quiroz, and Vicky Jacobowski. This program was produced and directed by Mark Baumgarten. If you'd like to get in touch with us, please go to our Facebook page or email us at marku42s.universe@gmail.com. You can listen to old shows at our website, marku42.com, or even our YouTube page, Marku42.
Marku42's Universe, copyright 2022.